Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another program in our ongoing coverage of the Casey Anthony trial. Joining me in the studio is my wife, Jan. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Simon. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our program.
From Southern Florida, we have bail bondsman William Cobra Storbs. Cobra, it's great to talk to you again.
Hey, Simon, good to be on the show. Hi, everybody. Good Sunday to be here.
And I think I'm going to do a quick Cobra roast. I saw the softer side of Cobra today. I mean, usually I think of him as being this rough, tough guy, kicking in people's doors and generally creating havoc. And guess what? He grows orchids. Would you like to comment on that, Cobra?
I have no idea what you be talking about. I don't. You must get your wife.
Okay, I have the picture. I'm gonna publish it. You've been warned.
Can you publish it on the radio?
And from the epicenter of the Casey Anthony trial, we're joined by journalist and contributor to Orlando Magazine, Dave Knackle. Dave, great to have you on the program.
Hi, Simon. Thank you. It's great to be on the program. Hello, everyone.
You don't grow orchids, do you?
No.
No.
No. I don't have a green thumb.
I don't even want to go down the green thumb road. Otherwise, I'd be forced to tell the story about the 5-pound bag of potatoes that got lost in our kitchen cabinet. So I think we'll just move on from gardening stories. And I think from the state of Maine, we're being joined by statement analysis guru Peter Hyatt. Peter, is that you on the line?
That's himself. Thanks for having me. Hello, everybody.
Well, it's great to talk to you again, Peter. I hope you survived Easter.
We had a nice time, thanks.
Great. And, of course, no program would be complete without the Crime Doctor. From Sin City, Nevada, we have the one and only Denny Griffin. Denny, it's great to have you on the program again.
Good afternoon, Simon and everyone, and I'll tell you, it's a great honor to be here, and I'm overwhelmed to be part of this array of talent you've assembled.
Uh-oh. Hey, that obviously means Denny wants something. You can't have written your book already and need a review.
No, but we're closing in on it, Simon. I'm just laying the groundwork.
Splendid. Okay. As always, our chat room is open. And if you have questions for the panel, please post them in there. I would ask that everyone be considerate of each other. People have different opinions. Be adult. Be grown up. Okay, where to start? I think a good place to start would be some breaking news that I heard about approximately 45 seconds before we went on air. Dave, what is this emergency motion that has been filed?
Well, it's called an emergency motion, but I don't really consider it any kind of an emergency. It's really the news organizations getting together, and they don't like all the restrictions on on the document we had to sign to get media credentials is a confidentiality agreement, and they really want to have more access to the jury selection. You know, those proceedings.
Oh, the way it currently sits, the press is not invited to the jury selection process.
Yeah, it says here that the court intends to implement and enforce the agreement, which is like saying that that they can't. The proposal is to limit the distribution of information concerning the change of venue for jury selection in this case prior to the commencement of jury selection to only those news organizations who agree not to disclose the location, not to arrive at the venue location before jury proceedings begin, and not to broadcast, publish, or otherwise disclose the location of the venue change. And then if you do any of that, you're going to have your credentials revoked and an incarceration and fine. So it's pretty strict.
So we'll be talking about this later on in the program, so I guess that means that Fox News will be excluded because Geraldo can't keep a secret to save his life.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he's going to be here. He's going to raise hell.
All right.
That's what he says.
How big, really, Dave? Do you think this case is going to be? I've heard rumors. I don't know if Peter's joined us or not, but comparing it to the O.J. Simpson trial, what do you think?
I think it's going to be at least as big, and if not bigger, because. For example, I've already seen a real increase in my readership because that's what, you know, that's what happens when you approach something. So then you have all the media people here hyping it. I would imagine someone like Nancy Grace is going to be here. You're going to have so many national media folks here. It's going to be and it'll be televised. So everybody hates a baby killer. And I think that's what makes it such a big story. Here you have this young, decent-looking mother who will stand trial for murdering her little toddler daughter, who was like an angel. I mean, people fell in love with that girl. So, all the stuff that I'm hearing is that even from Karen Levy in the courthouse is that it's going to be huge. They don't know. It's going to be the likes that Orlando's never seen.
Peter, I doubt that you had even heard about this emergency motion. Do you think that the press has a leg to stand on, that they should be able to have more control over their own world?
You know, I don't know. This is the first I'm hearing of it, and I'm not sure of the magnitude of the case. The case is obviously big, but I'm not sure that it's captured the imagination of the nation the way the racial divide of O.J. did. The Simon, I think the outcome of the trial, people aren't on the edge of the seats waiting for guilt or innocence. I think more people are interested in whether it's going to be a death penalty or not. But it's going to be big, and I saw that Fox News is now starting their own website just dedicated to this trial itself. So I think it's going to be interesting. I think there'll be a lot of drama. But I don't know how much access he's going to allow the press. I believe that he's done everything, he being Judge Perry, everything he can to make this a fair trial. And I think he's done a great job moving it along. So I guess it's time to fasten our seatbelts.
Right. And Denny, I know that this is coming as a surprise to you. Other cases that you've followed, is it common for the press to get somewhat incensed and start filing motions about access?
I've heard of cases before. I wouldn't go as far as say it's common, like you say, this is kind of breaking news as far as I'm concerned, but. I guess it shouldn't surprise me. I'm anticipating that this is going to be as much of a circus as possible. I know the judge, I think, is going to keep a lid on things in the courtroom and so on, but I think the peripheral stuff, the interaction or lack of between prosecutors or defense lawyers and the press and all this kind of thing, I think we're going to get our a full plate of all that kind of stuff as this thing goes.
Okay,
Carry on.
Okay, one thing that I think really needs clarifying is that the agreement is really all about refraining from disclosing the location of the jury selection until the proceedings begin. So in other words, they can arrive there that morning, but they can't say, hey, guess where we're broadcasting from? So if the proceedings begin at 9:30 in the morning, then they can break loose. So what they want to do is get in there and make announcements prior to the proceeding beginning. So, you know, I guess you take that for whatever it's worth.
But, I mean, this is a nickel and dime situation. You know, do you announce it at 6 a.m. or 9:30 a.m.? I mean, pretty much it's irrelevant because it's going to be all over the underworld press as soon as their trucks roll up.
Pretty much so. And then, you know, of course, the local TV stations are going to know about it, and all of a sudden you're going to see all these media trucks racing across town to the courthouse. Well, you know, but the thing is, people in Orlando aren't going to know at that time. People in Nebraska aren't going to know that at that time. You know, the general public is not going to know. It's going to be restricted to the people that that know something's going on around that courthouse.
Oh, and you don't think the internet is going to spread this like wildfire?
Well, you know, I mean, if it applies to the press, they can't. But there's nothing that says that you know, somebody that has a cell phone can't take a picture of it and send it to you're not going to the trial, okay? So why couldn't they send an image to you, and you could broadcast it on the internet? There's nothing, I think, that restricts you. It's only people that have applied for, and I think that was one of the arguments in the media meeting, was that all the local people said, if you restrict us, you're not going to be restricting all the local people there. So they're going to out-scoop us. I think that was part of it, you know, that the local stations could send this to their networks, and the networks would out-scoop the local stations.
Mm. Cobra, do you think this is a sensible direction for the media to take?
Absolutely. I think the media is in the business of reporting news. This is news, and whatever they decide to do, I don't think they should be barred from doing it. I mean, they didn't create it. They're reporting on it. You know, if they would have had all these restrictions, the baby would still be alive beforehand. You know what I mean? So they report on the news. So I think that they should be, under their First Amendment rights, be able to report on it the minute they know, hey, we're going over here to Hooptown, USA, and we're fixing to select a jury. And what is the harm in that? Because that jury is inside being asked questions. The press is not in there. They're just reporting that, hey, this is where it's going down. So, yeah, I think it's just, you know, some of this stuff is just, well, I'll let Jan tell you.
Well,
Peter, do you have any thoughts? I mean, it seems to me that this is very much a storm in a teacup. You know, whether you reported at 6:30 a.m. or 9:30 a.m. Really doesn't matter a hill of beans.
It doesn't, Simon. Bob Dylan played last week a week or so ago in Beijing, China, and the New York Times had a write-up on him that said he's a sellout because he wouldn't play Blowing in the Wind. It's a song he rarely has played in the last few years, maybe one out of every 10 shows. But the nearly 70-year-old artist was in Beijing, China playing, and within a few hours, I was listening to the concert on CD. The information moved that quickly. It's stunning and it's amazing. But we're at the point now where I think people are kind of yawning. Simon, I guess I really should be more forthcoming with this and see what your pal thinks about it. Put on the channel, what's it called, the channel that has the Court TV, it used to be called In Session, I'm sorry. In Session, they are looking for every time Casey Anthony sneezes to be a blockbuster breakthrough of some form. And they have on these shilling attorneys who will say, I don't know, this looks awful bad for the prosecution. This is a slam dunk case. It's theatrics, yes, but there's much ado about nothing in this thing. It is a tempest in a teapot. They're looking to hype it so much so. And I know that the Nancy Grace show is moving some people down there and they're gearing up. And this show, I think, is in some ways is going to be a major letdown for a lot of people. I don't think it's going to be the career maker that OJ was for a number of those involved. But these folks in media, they're ready to slit each other's throats over a scoop or a story, where I think most of us, and I think maybe a lot of your listeners and those that read and follow you and Jan's work, most of us are interested in justice. And there are a lot of people, I think Dave said it well, or Cobra, that this little girl has really been adopted by America and wants to see justice. I think most of us believe it's going to be justice. But the headlines that that In Session is using are almost cartoon-like with their goofiness. I'm trying to hype this up. This is a murder trial. This is a prosecution case that's very, very straightforward. And I think the drama is going to be with Cindy Anthony. I think that she is going to be the star. You remember, I don't mean to date myself, but you remember when Muhammad Ali was considered the best PR man he could hire was himself. Because before he was an aged boxer, he was a boxer that he would defy people to shut his mouth. And he would be very brash. And people hated him. They wanted to see him get his block knocked off. But that brought in viewership. That brought people in. And I think that if you look at this from the perspective of fame brings money, Cindy Anthony hasn't worked a day in her life since her granddaughter was murdered. She hasn't worked at all, yet she was able to pay a house that was in foreclosure. She was able to take a vacation, get tattooed, and she looks like she's well-fed to me. But she hasn't worked a day in her life, neither has George. So somehow or another, they turned their infamy, because the public hates Cindy mostly, into money. And I think that's what's going to be the big story in this is going to be afterwards, is who gets the movie deal, who gets the book deal, what does Baez get out of this? Because I think you and I both know that when Baez has the cameras on him, he's not a good attorney. He's not a sharp man. He's not a well-spoken man. And he is not an honest man. He lies with impunity. He tests off the charts every time. In fact, he makes me weary just trying to follow his words. But I think it's I think the story is going to be more the drama. If they can get Lee up there and get him rolling, if they can get that rabid Doberman in Cindy to come out, or George to find out if he'll be the weepy George or he'll be the defending George. But in terms of waiting for what Jose Baez is going to present to us as a defense, there's nothing. Nothing they can do.
Right. Denny, do you think it's going to be the trial of a century or just this huge ho-hum, let's move on?
I think it's got all the potential to be the trial of the century, at least, you know, to date. Of course, the century's got a ways to go yet. But it looks to me like everybody's getting geared up. The media and so forth are getting up to have this be a big thing. It may flop, but I think there's going to be every effort made, and I think the potential is there. I'd be very surprised if it's not kind of a major event.
All right, let's move on to more tangible items. There were some rulings that came down this week. I don't know how significant they are. Science and juries don't tend to really get along really nice. Number one, the death banding on the hair evidence is in. Dave, is this significant?
You're asking a bald-headed guy?
Well, excuse me, yes it is, but I think it's one that the defense can, I see, Judge Perry is one who tends to believe that whatever evidence there is, let the jury look at it, let them make the determination. And the defense can come back and say, yeah, but you know what, out of all those hairs that they found in there, only one of them had the death pan. Why weren't there more? So the defense can play their angle out of it, too. Is it significant? Yes, because there was a death band hair, but they can't even prove for sure that it was Kaylee's. Other than that, I mean, really, it could be no other, because the mitochondrial DNA showed that it came from Cindy's side of the family, the mother's side. Casey, it could have been Casey's hair, Cindy's hair, grandmother's hair, great grandmother's hair. But it could have even come from Lee. But the thing is, because it's passed down. But the thing is that he can't pass it down. The problem is that Casey would have had to dug up her great grandmother to get that death band, that death band hair. So it's not something that just pops out the window and say, well, it can't be used. So in a sense, yeah, it's important. But I still think the defense can work around that.
Okay. Peter, I don't know if you agree with me or not, but I'm firmly of the opinion that juries and science are oil and water. How on earth are you going to present leading-edge technology to 12 men and women that probably don't even remember, basic science classes in high school?
Well, I agree with you about the oil and water analogy. They don't mix well, and both sides are going to be aiming for certain types of jurors. Baez has his work cut out for him here, and what he's going to be looking for is those that will show a certain type of body language reaction to the scientific questions that shows an impatience. He wants an impatient with science. That's speaking another language that's of no interest to me at all. Move on. He's going to want that type, whereas the prosecution is going to want someone that has perhaps some form of science or mathematics, actually, in their background. So we're not surprised to hear questions about what do you do for hobbies? Baez should be gearing up to be asking questions about people's hobbies, looking for those who have a certain side of the brain more apt to be used than the other side. For instance, do you play chess? A chess player normally, for the most part, not always, but for the most part, is pretty good at mathematics and science. Someone that's more into music, maybe more the side of music, poetry, and literature, that would be someone that Baez might be more interested in. There's so many amazing dynamics going on. And I think probably a number of us have seen Dr. Lillian Glass's chiding of the prosecution for not hiring, someone like her in helping with the jury selection. I think it could be a potential issue, but not anywhere near the ability to overcome the mountain of evidence. But you're exactly right. It's a hard sell to juries. I don't think it's going to be a big emphasis. And I think they really need to focus on her behavior more than anything else, which is the judge has allowed in.
Denny, I'm going to bounce an idea off you. Obviously, introducing science to a jury is a bit of an uphill battle. But the way I see it, the prosecution need to get in there simple and quick. The defense, on the other hand, are probably going to want to make it much more complex, much more confusing, and drag the entire ordeal out so that by the time, you know, the jury actually gets round to deliberation, that they're just going to go, science, oh, I don't even want to go there.
That sounds like a reasonable strategy. I think if I were in Jose and his team's shoes, maybe that's what I'd want to do, is get these people so confused and so sick and tired of hearing about it, they just say, okay, we're not even going to consider this stuff. It's all crap, or we're not sure what it is. We don't really understand it. So we'll ignore that, disregard that, and go along with other stuff that we do understand or have a better grip on.
Right.
And, you know,
things that they can wrap their heads around.
Simon?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, obviously various people who watch or follow the trial are going to have different levels of understanding, probably, of what all this stuff means, all the forensics and the scientific stuff. And some people may be interested in it and really get into it. My guess is that the majority are not going to be all that excited about it. I mean, I remember from O.J., it was tough for me when they were doing the DNA stuff. It wasn't my area, and I wasn't particularly interested in it. And when it dragged on, and I kind of lost interest. But if like I say, if I were in the defense team shoes, I agree with you. I would anticipate the prosecution want to get in there, drive the point home, and get out. And that the defense, it would be in their best interest to drag it on. What's the old saying? Muddle the waters and all that kind of stuff. So I suspect that's the way they'll go.
Peter, I think you were wanting to chime in, so the microphone is yours.
Yes, please. I agree with Denny. When they're aiming for certain types of jurors, one of the things that makes it interesting in terms of watching this aspect of the trial is listening to the questions that the attorneys pose to potential jurors. If Baez and team, if they're thinking about using Casey was molested somewhere, and I think we're going to hear that eventually, especially in the penalty phase, but if he's thinking of using that somehow and slipping it out during the trial, what we'll hear is questions such as this. What were you like growing up? Tell me about yourself when you were 4 or 5. What do you remember? Some of your earliest recollection, that sort of thing. Being very careful not to give many words to the potential jurors. What they're looking for is people that may have been victims of abuse themselves, looking for that sympathy factor. Then when they find people that are victims of say, sexual abuse, if someone says, well, when I was a child, I such and such, when a person refers to themselves as a child early on in life, there is a strong correlation between that and sexual abuse. If they say, when I was a boy, when I was a kid, there's not so strong. But when they use the word child, referring to themselves, then what they want to do is weed out those who were victims of, let's say, sexual abuse or child abuse, who have overcome. They don't want them in the jury. They don't want someone that who was, say, beaten as a child and now is an excellent parent, because that person will not have the empathy they want with Casey Anthony. They want someone that is going to be who have suffered under that type of abuse, but then perhaps even lost their own children, that sort of thing. Those type of problems churning up, they will be able to have an empathy with a very non-empathetic character in Casey Anthony. I mean, she is not anyone that there's scarcely a soul in the country that has any empathy towards her. This will be a focus then. So we get a chance to see, and I don't think it will be coming from bias on this, but we get a chance to see if Chaney Mason can put aside his ego and really get down to grassroots and put up a fight or not. And these are the type of things that he got to really concentrate on, the psychological aspects, really concentrate, get in there deep, get into the trenches, and fight to get certain people in and certain people out. I wouldn't be surprised if we have someone there who may be hired in a clerical position who is pretty and attractive, and they're going to be watching the eyes of the male jurors very carefully. if they see someone with a roving eye or a lecherous eye, boom, they're going to consider that. That maybe he'll consider Casey as pretty and build sympathy for her. So this is in itself is a chess game, and I don't think that Baez has any experience in this matter. Mason should.
And so should Ann Pinnell.
So it'd be really interesting, I think, how it will break down.
Okay, I think Dave was trying to.
I think the entire team. Yeah, I think the entire team is probably going to be there to do this because they're all qualified except for Baez, basically. Although he's probably helped pick a jury. I mean, I'm sure in his DUI cases and stuff like that. But this is something really major. But you know, there's a lot of things, areas you can go into. I mean, for example, Baez wants to go down to Miami. That's not going to happen. But because of the Hispanic or Latina crowd down there. But on one hand, that might be good for him. But on the other hand, Casey blamed on this fictitious Hispanic nanny. That's going to aggravate some people, too. So you don't know which way to go. Then, you know, you look for a Hispanic audience, let's say, and then you've got Puerto Ricans who tend to be a little bit more liberal, and your Cubans tend to be more conservative. So, you know, when you can't, in other words, you can't sit there and say, let's go get a Hispanic jury, or let's go get an all-white jury, or whatever. Because you can look at an electrical engineer, and there's someone who's very methodical, very exacting and precise. They tend to be conservative people. But how do you know what they want? I mean, a woman's going to sit there and say, you know, I don't like the looks of her. She's a child killer. And at the same time, you know, the same thing that Peter said with the guys looking at her. You know, it's going to be a real tough call. I don't know how they're going to do it, but they're going to have to.
Denny, you're long in the tooth like I am. The subject of jury selection is an interesting science and art form. It seems to me that Judge Perry has kind of put the kibosh on, you know, most of the regular tactics of canvassing the area and finding out, you know, what people are like in that neighborhood, because he hasn't said where the jury's going to be picked. Do you think this is going to be a big challenge? I mean, jury consultants, it's too late.
You know, I got to tell you the truth, Simon. I think Peter mentioned a few minutes ago about this being like a chess match. And in my opinion, trials have gotten, if you want to use the word high-tech or so sophisticated, with all the consultants and polling and all this kind of stuff, and you know, people, like Peter said, observing the eyes or the expressions or whatever, or male jurors, what are they thinking perhaps about Casey? All these things have gotten to me take away from the trial. I would almost rather be back to the days when they didn't have all this sophistication. I know it serves a purpose. Maybe you get a better jury. Of course, it depends which side you're on. You're looking for the best jurors you can find for your particular position, but the less whatever Judge Perry can do, or because of the circumstances and you know, not knowing until the last minute where the jury's going to be selected and all that, I'm glad of that. I'd rather see it not be so such a chess match, if you would, about who's got the better jury people, consultants, and so on. So I'm. If that's what happens here, I'm actually kind of happy about it.
Yeah, I don't have any big gripes, I have to admit.
And, you know, Simon, let me just go back for a second, if I can, to the chess match comment from Peter. This was several years ago. It has nothing to do with this case. But I was in a watering hole one night, and I happened to be there in the same place that there was a defense lawyer and an ADA, an assistant DA, who were engaged in a trial. And the trial had been completed. They were waiting for a verdict, so their testimony was done and so forth. And these guys, in spite of their differences as far as in court went, they were buds, and they were sharing a cocktail after work. And the conversation, the parts of it that I overheard, was exactly what Peter says. In other words, nothing was mentioned like the prosecutor was representing the people. Nothing was mentioned about the people. And the defense attorney was representing the defendant. It was comparing their strategies. Who was smarter? And then they would laugh, you know, about who got the better of this one on that. And it was like a personal thing, of a game of some kind, that it wasn't a guilty or innocent defendant versus the people of the state. It was two lawyers, and looking at it from the perspective, am I sharper than he is, you know, and who won the battle? So it was, I hadn't really thought that much about it until I actually heard these guys talking. I said, man, this is something. The defendant was never mentioned. The people were never mentioned. It was strictly, did I outfox you? And then giggle, giggle, you know, well, you did. You got me on that one, but I got you back on this one. So it was quite an eye-opener for me.
Yeah, can I comment to that? It's there's a certain innocence, I think, that's lost like that when reality hits us. I remember being in a locker room or a hockey game and hearing just incredible vulgarity coming out. We were playing against the firemen, New York City policemen, and some doctors. And the vulgarity, which is kind of common in a locker room like that, but what shocked me, Denny, was that the doctors and the gynecologists, the way they spoke, really just took away that innocent feeling. It made me nervous about where to send my wife to go to a doctor's. And I know everyone's not like that. And just the way not every attorney is like that, where it's a game, but it certainly feels like that sometimes when we look at these things, that we have almost rose-colored glasses. But for all the bad out there, there are still those that really believe they're doing the right thing and following through with justice. But for many, it's a game and it's about money. And I think the Casey Anthony case itself has highlighted for us and for our country what a bunch of money-grabbing, selfish, narcissistic people we are. We saw the attorneys all step up to join the dream team and then bail away quickly when the promise of money did not come through. This has shown a lot of bad about us as a country and how we look at justice. So in some ways, it's been very disheartening.
Okay, I'm going to change gears here. Something that really surprised me last week was the ruling about the infamous heart sticker that doesn't actually exist anymore. I basically had assumed that both the prosecution and defense had just dropped the whole thing. You know, it really wasn't all that important. But apparently it is going to be allowed in evidence. Dave, were you surprised by that move?
I don't remember anything about it being dropped. And then certainly when the defense filed motions. So, but, that was one that I think that could have gone either way. I'm glad it went with the state. But But the judge was really smart on how he said that. He said that, you know, you might see a car driving off from a crime scene, a red car, but you don't have a photograph of it. So can you go into the courtroom and say, yes, I saw that red car drive off from the robbed the bank, I mean. So, yeah, I saw that car drive away from the bank, that red car. So you don't actually have a car, but you saw it. Somebody saw it. So it's the same thing here. You can say that you saw it. Now the defense can come back and say, but, you know, are you going to sit here and tell me point blank that it was definitely a heart sticker? And she's going to have to come back and say, well, no, I can't. I'm just saying that's what it looked like to me. And that's all they're going to get out of that FBI agent. So if nobody with Orange County or the MBI or FDLE took any photographs before it was shipped up to the FBI, then that's all it's going to be. It's just one word against another. But still, the jury can buy it.
Cobra, do you see any worth in evidence that no longer exists?
Yeah. Because that was like one of the biggest things that Nancy Grace was talking about. And they duct taped the little girl's face and they put a heart sticker on there. And now all of a sudden they've lost the damn heart sticker. She'll be crushed. She'll be crushed.
Cobra.
Shut his mic off. Hey, what mic's he on? Shut his mic off. Oh, Lord Jesus.
Everyone needs a Cobra on their show.
Yeah. How does one do that? I mean, Peter, you're in the department up there. I mean, how does one do that? You take in evidence, you put it in an evidence bag, you seal it as evidence, and then what? Somebody got a keepsake up on their mantelpiece and go, look, this is a little heart that we got from down in Orlando. I mean, how does this happen? You know what I mean? How does this happen?
No, I was, Simon, this one, I was surprised because I thought that, and actually Dave is making me think about this now, maybe Judge Perry kept this in to be fair to the defense, you know, to throw them a bone because it obviously would be shot down pretty quickly. But I think it still is a victory for the prosecution because it leaves an impression, bad choice of words, but it leaves an impression in our minds of a real louse of a human being to have that final insult with the heart sticker on the tape, because she was ducked, put in triple bag like she's trash. We've heard 1,000 times from Nancy Grace, and we'll hear it a lot more times. But I was surprised a little bit at that.
Well, let me just ask one question, if I may, for everyone. If the defense could take this sort of attack, not attack, but tack, for tact, you know. Suppose the defense came back and said something like, well, don't you think that if she's really guilty of something, of murdering her daughter, she wouldn't have put a heart sticker on the duct tape? Because that's something that stands for love, not hate.
Yeah, no, that's the matter of fact, that's one of those, the reason the prosecution wants it in is because so often when mothers kill a child, they will put the child wrapped in a blanket. They'll do something even afterwards that shows some form of remorse or some confliction between love and hate. So I think that's why the prosecution wanted it in, because it's something that is tied in very commonly with mothers that kill and fathers that kill too.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay. I'm getting kind of bored with the whole Fry stuff. Let's move right along here. The stain is in, the chloroform is in, but there's riders on everything, right? And it basically is, I'm letting the evidence in, but it's up to you, the prosecution, to, you know, prove its viability. Dave, do you think he has made a wise decision?
Yes, absolutely. I think he did, because if you watch this guy in the courtroom, He's relatively methodical. I mean, it's almost like you can sense that he knows how he's going to rule long before he does. But he's always come across as the kind of a person that says, well, you know what? I'm going to leave it for the jury. That seems to be the way he runs his courtroom. And so none of this surprises me. Now, I'm kind of surprised that he's taking as long as he is on the air sample motion. But that's pretty tricky, I guess, because it's never been used in a court trial. So, but everything that he does is like that. He comes across and he says, okay, I'm going to give it to the jury. And you guys are going to have to sort out which one, you know, wins the battle here. So, yes, I think he's right on all of his decisions so far.
I'll tell you what we're going to do. Just for grins, we're going to take a caller. Someone coming in from the 516 area code. What's your name and what's your question for us?
Hi, all. This is Frog, also known as Diane. I'm calling about the sticker. There were two stickers found at the scene. One was found with the skull and the duct tape. Another sticker was found on a piece of cardboard, I don't know, 10, 15 feet away. There are two stickers. They have both stickers. They do not have a picture of the residue from the duct tape. That's what they're missing, but they have the sticker. And I've been saying this for years. Nobody seems to listen to me. There's two stickers, people.
Okay. I wasn't personally aware of that.
It was released, I think it was a December 2009 release, where they showed all of the things that they collected from the site.
Dave, does that ring any bells with you?
Well, no. I know of one sticker, but there could easily be two, you know. But then you have an argument over which one was it. So I think they'd be better served if they only had one.
Well, one was stuck to the cardboard.
I remember that one. I know that one, but I don't know where did
they
find the other one, in water?
No, they found it with the duct tape. It might have been in the bags. I'm not sure, but it was right where the duct tape was.
Well, that's interesting because I'm not familiar with that. I know they found the one that was stuck to, like, the cardboard.
Yeah.
And that's the only one that I remember. But I'm going to take your word for it.
I had kept notes. Unfortunately, it's been so long, I can't find the note of what exact release it was in.
I know what you mean. There's so many notes,
so
you never know where to find them again. But
exactly. But there are two stickers.
Well, I think the fact that they're going to bring up that there were stickers found at the scene, and here's something that looks like residue from a sticker, you know, I think that's going to have a lot of weight to the jury.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's not so much about science. It's something that people can understand.
Correct.
Right. Okay.
Alrighty. That's all I wanted to say.
Thank you.
I enjoy your show.
Well, thank you. Okay.
Take care.
Want to open up a complete can of worms. Still outstanding is the whole business about George and Cindy. Should they be permitted to be in the court prior to them being on the witness stand? I mean, that there's many ways you can look at this. Anyone want to jump in? Jan, you've been remarkably quiet. Why don't you give us a good ear bashing on this one?
You're saying that, and you know how I feel about that. No, I don't think they should be allowed in there until after they testify. They should be treated just like everybody else with the rules and the law, and go back. They be allowed in, but not until after they testify.
Okay, Peter, Should they be allowed to, you know, be in the room prior to them giving testimony?
No, Jan said it well, and the fact that the prosecution can show that they have lied and been willing to lie is another strong reason why they cannot be allowed to listen to the other testimonies. They'll have to get it what they can through Baez or whatever means they want to afterwards, but they are witnesses and they need to be sequestered as such.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I just don't think that they should be given special privileges in this case, especially.
Dave, I know you're biting your tongue, but just bear with me.
okay.
Denny, you're like me. You've been around the block. Should the Anthonys be allowed in the courtroom?
I don't see why. My answer is.
All right, now, I guess it's time to play devil's advocate. I spent some time earlier this week in talking with a criminal defense attorney, and the subject came up. And Dave, I understand you. Also talked to a criminal defense attorney, incidentally, these are two completely different people. What was the story that you heard?
Well, it was really a thing where, I don't want to give too much away because it's what I'm going to be writing about tomorrow for the magazine. But he basically said there's no reason to keep them out. They can watch it on TV. They could access it on the internet. They're going to see and hear about it anyway. So there were other reasons, like this is a two-sided coin. On one side, you've got the fact that they are victims. They lost their granddaughter. The Florida Constitution tells them that they can attend the trial. On the other hand, they're witnesses, and they're going to need to be sequestered. But they don't have to be sequestered until the one, like when George is saying something on the stand, then Cindy and Lee must remain outside. Once Cindy gives her testimony, she's allowed to stay in because there's nothing she could do to hurt what George or Lee say. So then as the second one goes in and testifies, that person can come in and sit in, and then the third one. So once Lee, George, and Cindy make their statements, then there's no reason why they shouldn't be able to stay in the courtroom. They won't be asked again, most likely. Or if they will be, it would probably be during the penalty phase. But I'm going to go more in depth on it on the article tomorrow. But that's basically what this is a prominent attorney, and this is what he told me. So,
right. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's been my experience, if you will, that and I can't cite case law. I'm not a lawyer. But, you know, generally, witnesses who are going to be testifying cannot be in the courtroom. And it is an interesting dichotomy. You know, on the one hand, that they can play the victim card, and on the other hand, you know, they're witnesses. Cobra, do you think they should be allowed in?
Hell no, they shouldn't be. I think it's against the rules of parliamentary procedure. But the fact of the matter is, like Dave and everybody else said, they'll be able to watch it on the internet, listen to the news, and do all the stuff and still hear things. But why? It doesn't even matter. They've already established themselves as liars, number one. And number two, I'm not a very good one that asked about the judicial system, because I think justice is how much can you afford. And I didn't even know that in a criminal proceeding that when they're taking depositions from the other side, that you, being accused, cannot attend or participate in those depositions. So when I found that out, I think they changed all the damn rules. So, but back to these two knuckleheads, I don't think it's going to make a hill of beans one way or the other, to tell you the truth. I've already heard enough lies to get them both about 10 years in prison for perjury. So what the hell?
I think, can I put some more into this, please?
Oh, sure.
I think
flavor it up a little bit, Jan.
There is a lot more to this than what they are saying. It is not because they want to be there in the trial. They are wanting there to use their little pity facial expressions. They're probably going to turn on the waterworks during the trial so the jury can see this throughout the whole trial. And they're going to use it because that's what they've done all along. They've used the pity party all along to try to get sympathy from everybody to get away with everything, and that is the reason they want in those doors. I don't think it got anything to do with the trial itself.
Peter, you must be just chomping at the bit.
Jan's really well representing what I think is the position of justice here. They have no business being in that courtroom. They are witnesses. They have a history of lying. And they've done nothing but manipulate from day one. They need to be sequestered. They need to be, at least an attempt needs to be made to keep this as fair as possible. And any witness would be sequestered in this scenario. Why should they get any special privileges? Jen's right. They're looking to manipulate.
Well, I got one quick little thing. I think that it wouldn't be a free ride. I mean, if they were allowed in, this is just my own opinion. There would have to be something in the rules that say, like even what people are saying on the chat: no gum chewing, no sighing, no frowns, anything at all to set to tick the judge off means an automatic boot. Out the door you go. You know, that's the end of it, and they can't come back in until they all have testified.
I'm afraid that might leave a door open for complaints and appeal later on in terms of how they were treated, that sort of thing. I think that
you mean for
the judge. No, in terms of looking at the big picture, yeah, I think that any complaints against the judge later on is going to be difficult. And they could even say that this thrown off this piece, that thrown off that piece, and this impacted Casey and that impacted Baez. And I think they got to play it really straight here and tight to the rules.
Yeah, but what are the rules? I mean, if you think about it, on one hand, you got the Florida Constitution that allows them in, and then on the other hand, as victims. On the other hand, they're going to be sequestered as witnesses.
Yeah, no, I know it's not an easy call. I think that the presentation that Jan gave of the reasons why it could impact justice, I think that at one place they're going to look at and say, what's the most important thing going on here? What trumps the other thing? And that, I think, is the interest of justice. And we mustn't have any witnesses on either side tainted for any reason at all. I don't know that they can make an argument the way Jan did in terms of you know, we got to keep them out because they're manipulative and troublemakers. But I think everyone knows that's like the 800-pound gorilla in the room. I think that if they're going to sequester witnesses, then George and Cindy need to be considered as witnesses. If they're not, then they're not. So that kind of thing. But it's not an easy one for him. I think he's going to rule and have them out.
Let me ask you this one. I guess this is something I addressed too. But what was I going to say now? never mind. I can't remember. I just had the thought in my head and I lost it. Don't you hate that when you get old?
That happens to me all the time.
Okay.
Seeing as we're on Jan's hot buttons at the moment, let's move on to a little news item. This week, Fox News announced that they indeed would be covering the trial, And they were going to send no less a luminary and wonderful reporter than Geraldo Rivera. Jen, I'm not going to force you into giving the exact quote, but what was it Geraldo said?
Oh, I can't. All I know, can remember right at this moment is that he's going to be going covering this case for Fox News, of course, and that he was going to be raising hell down there. Let's see if I can. I'm looking for the exact quote.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah. He's going to go raise hell. He's some big hot-to-do thing, but he thinks he's all that.
Hey, you got to look on the bright side. You know, in Iraq, he could have had lots of people killed by his loose lips. In this case, there's only one life at stake.
There's a good trade-off.
Right. Hey, Denny, are you looking forward to the Geraldo coverage of the trial?
Not necessarily. weigh in for just a second. To go back to the allowing Cindy and George in. I come down on this. First of all, I don't care for those people. That's neither here nor there, I suppose. But I think they, you know, like everybody says, it's a way off as victims. Are they allowed? But, you know, I can visualize, if they're in the courtroom, a split screen. When certain witnesses are on, there'll be one half of the screen showing the witness, and the other half will be on Cindy and George to get every expression, every grimace.
Exactly.
Every reaction. And I just think it would be I hope Perry rules that they can come in after, you know, treats them as witnesses, not victims, and allows them to attend and sit in after the... after their testimony's done.
Well, I remember what I was going to ask now, or say now, and it had to do with you remember at the some of the hearings where George, Cindy, and Lee testified that one of the it never happened with the defense, but it did with the prosecutors, where they'd have to sit there and say, by the way, you know what, I have a transcript in my hand, and I can tell you exactly what you said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on such and such a date. And that's not what you said today. You know, so okay, well, then if I said that, Cindy, we got all coy and nasty, then I must have said it. All right, let me see it. And then, so I think there's always going to be that if they try and lie, then the prosecutors are going to have that little piece of paper right there that says, gotcha.
Yeah, that's when Cindy decided to say that her medicine was changed and helped get her memory back. About the dryer sheets, the Fab softener sheets and stuff, Febreze.
Yeah, right.
Spray,
yeah, like that sort of thing, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, well, I've got the quote that Geraldo said now.
Okay.
It says, he says, we're going to raise some hell down there in Orlando and bust apart some of the preconceived notions that may exist.
Peter, are you excited?
I'd like to hear her repeat that again because there's a beat there. Could you read that again?
We're going to raise some hell down there in Orlando and bust apart some of the preconceived notions that may exist.
Okay. One of the things, Simon, that I hope I don't jump ahead too much, but I'm going to have to cut a little early today, regarding the media coverage, didn't come from Geraldo. Now, we know Geraldo's friends with Baez, and you heard me speak about that before. But Mark Nijane said that when he, it's very similar, when he was going to be doing commentary down there, he wants to dispel a lot of the, I don't get the word he used, but nonsense or misconceptions or whatever on the Internet. And I thought to myself, what nonsense is on the Internet? What is he referring to? Who is he referring to? I haven't seen web pages with crazy, outrageous things. What I've heard is the same things that I'm hearing from the panel today, the same things I'm hearing from people at my blog, the same things that are being in the social networking sites, is that this child was murdered by his mother, and people debate things like the death penalty or
if George and Cindy should be indicted and that sort of thing. But I don't see any wild theories that need to be debunked by any experts. And my question, I guess, for everybody else, like with Gerardo, what are they talking about? What are they referring to? What's the wild things that are, like, what am I missing out there? Here in lonely Maine someplace, I guess. I don't know. What am I missing?
We're missing it, too.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, Geraldo has, some aging star power, I guess. He's going to do, the Geraldo thing. Nancy's going to do the Nancy thing. And all we're going to be hearing is, you know, bombshell. You know, Cindy Anthony chewed gum.
Yeah. Well, here's an interesting little piece of information that Alan Moore, you know, he's the media guy at the Orange County Jail, and he told me that CNN, and he means all of CNN, they're not welcome. Anytime that they ask for information, including in session, True TV, anything they ever ask for, he doesn't give it to them. They've got like a policy there at the jail that CNN gets nothing.
Ooh.
Yeah. Because of Nancy Grace and you know, that's what it really comes down to.
It sounds like the Amanda Knox coverage where the media was it sounds similar to the Amanda Knox coverage where media was divided into either pro-Amanda or anti-Amanda, and certain stories were given to some and not to others. And I think it's time that the cutthroating is the throat cutting is going to reach a crescendo as this thing goes on. But I'm missing the bombshells. I don't know what the controversy is, and I almost feel like I'm out of it. But I don't see it anywhere. I think that when we say what type of gum was Cindy Anthony popping in there, we see the disdain for the judicial system. And I think it's an important piece, actually, because I think it's going to play into the juror. I don't think that they can be coached into good behavior. The jury is going to see that type of behavior, or Lee coming in slovenly dressed, unshaven, unable to hold his contempt back from the judicial system. Or maybe we're going to get something that will just be earth-shattering, where Crazy Casey wants to now prove that she's insane, so she takes the stand. And what happens then? Can the judge stop the proceedings and say, your client's nuts, we've got to reconsider this whole thing? Like, there has to be some ace in the deck to pull out here, and I don't see anything anywhere.
Oh, we're 1 week away from jury selection. What are we up for in the next 5 days? I mean, are we going to see a flurry of motions? We talked at the beginning of the program about the move by very likely the Orlando Sentinel over the press coverage. But what else can we expect? Dave, do you see a flurry of motions this week?
Yeah, there is a status hearing, and there are pending motions. Now, here on the docket, it doesn't say what they are, but I know we have outstanding motions. And the emergency motion of news organizations to intervene and for reconsideration of implementation and enforcement of confidentiality agreement. So whatever we have on the pending motions, I could come into the motions that were filed, but there's still that last motion on the air samples. There are motions. I think there's a defense motion in limine. Let me see what that is. Ms. Anthony's social behavior and the resulting photographs are relevant as to the consciousness of guilt. So here's something that just came in, you know, on on the 28th. I haven't had a chance to read it yet. But, you know, I don't know what else there is out there. If anybody else can, you know, can call in or say in the chat room what they know of, that would be appreciated.
Right. Okay. I know that Peter doesn't have much time left. He's got a scram. But before he leaves, I do want to bring up one other item, and that is our good friend Mark Neshane, who apparently is going to be offering TV commentary. I personally view this as a huge potential of conflict of interest. You know, he's represented the Anthonys. He's represented Techwiz Equisearch. I mean, how can this man go on TV?
I think it's tricky. I'm sorry I have to leave, but I found him to be interesting. I found him to be someone that I'd like to hear speak regarding George and Cindy. I thought it was fascinating how he was a man apparently not known here in the Northeast, but a man of stature in Florida, well known, and that even him, or even he with his reputation and as a high-powered attorney, even he was unable to put a muzzle on Cindy Anthony. And so that puts him in the category of fascinating. I thought that he handled himself well on the Nancy Grace show. He didn't buy into the silly back-and-forth sort of thing. So from a listening standpoint, I am interested to hear what he has to say. In terms of the conflict of interest, wow, I mean, that's quite a mess there.
Well, let me ask you this then. Remember John Jay represented Anthony Lazzaro, and he was on True TV all the time, you know, in session. So, you know, I would say what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
Yeah, and it may work out fine in that way, and I personally would like to hear him. I found at times some of his answers were, especially given his profession, were without qualifiers. He was speaking some straight language there. So I'd like to hear him on the case, but what happens as I think it's inevitable, he's going to drift into areas that may come under the confidentiality statutes in Florida, and I don't see how it cannot happen. As he speaks freely, as he is in the editing process, his mind is choosing words in less than a microsecond. Things are going to slip out there, and I wonder, especially as you said before, Cindy makes a smirk over something, or George puts on the tears. Let's say that he's commenting at that point. He could easily reach back and tell us something that's fascinating, but something he probably shouldn't have said. So it's a gamble. It's a roll of the dice.
He's a pretty sharp guy, though. I mean, I think, you know, there's more of a problem with bias coming out at the end of a hearing and or, you know, elsewhere going on TV and talking about the case. I think that's more of an issue than anything else.
I agree. He's and the thing is, the James is a smart man, and he's a sharp. Bias isn't. And so the ability to reframe one's language is difficult for all of us. How much more so for Jose Baez, and that's why I think he puts his foot in his mouth so often. It's going to be more entertainment for us, Simon.
Denny,
yes.
Do you have any comments on Mark Najem becoming a TV commentator?
Well, I agree, I think, with what Peter said, that, he probably has some stuff, and then to get his take on things would be interesting. And going back to Peter's point about what needs to be set straight here, what are Geraldo going to do or Najem going to do that is so out of whack? But, I don't know. It seems like it's going to be very close. He's going to have to walk a very fine line here to keep from saying something he shouldn't say. He is a smart guy. Maybe he can do it. But,
well,
I think we're just going to have to wait and see how it shakes out.
Cobra, you know everyone in the entire universe. I'm sure that you've tangled with Najem at some point. Do you think he's making a wise decision?
Have you ever heard my dedication song to a couple of these other attorneys? I think it kind of goes like this. Blinded by the light. That's what they are. They're blinded by the light. And the thing of it is I agree and disagree with the panel there saying that me, James, is a smart counselor. He's a counselor. As far as smart, I think he's a little on the blinded side. But if he was smart, back in the day when myself and Richard Grund reached out to him, the number one person that he should have been representing throughout this whole case would have been Richard Grund. Had he done that, he would have sealed his entire, future on commentations, books, and everything else, because as we all know, Richard Grund is probably the one of the most beat-down people in this entire case, him and his son Jesse, and we've reached out to Najem, and for some reason, he decided to go, dancing around the other side, and I seen him on Nancy Grace the other night giving his spiel of it. Now, let me ask you a question. Had this been your counselor, everything that happens between an attorney and a client is supposed to be known as attorney-client privilege. I don't think that I would want, unless I was there or signed off on the guy, I don't think I'd want my lawyer on national TV speaking of things behind the scenes that may or may not have happened. And I don't know that that's very smart for someone of his caliber to participate in. Me, I don't think he'd make a very good commentator. He looks more like an Undertaker to me.
Well, that's quite an undertaking then, isn't it?
I mean, Dave, do you think he's treading a bit of a fine line here?
Well, no, because he's a real sharp, he's very smart. He wouldn't be in his position if he wasn't all that smart. And I think he knows the difference between client privilege, what is and what isn't. So, if somebody starts bringing up, what's his name, Tim Miller and TES, he's going to tell Nancy or whoever, I can't go there. So if he wants to just offer his opinions on what he feels about the trial, I don't think there's any problem there. I mean, it's not Tim Miller who's on trial. He's going to be brought into the trial, I'm sure. But Najem says on radio or television or whatever, there's nothing that would get him in any trouble. I mean, you think about it. There's stuff on the Judge Perry was interviewed on television recently. Bob Keeling, went down that road. I mean, it's not like these people can't go out and greet the public.
Well, talking to you, and the next thing we know, he ain't the judge no more. So, how do you explain that?
boy. I lost a lot of hair over that one. It really wasn't anything like that. It was the defense found some kind of a loophole. But you know what? In the end, it's not like nobody sits there and laughs at the defense now because they went from Strickland to stricter. They couldn't have asked for a better judge. I mean, we couldn't have asked for a better judge. Not that there was anything wrong with Judge Strickland at all, but this guy, Perry, he doesn't cut them any slack at all. None. It's worse for the defense.
Okay, there is one last item that I want to get to. The trial supposedly is set to start on May 17th. Is that realistic? I mean, I still have real doubts about being able to see the jury in 5 days. I mean, Baez and Ashton would take 3 days to figure out what to order at a lunch counter.
Who do you want to take this one first?
Well, you can grab it if you want.
Well, I kind of believe, because I see how this these hearings go, and the defense drags things on and on and on and on and on, and Judge Perry, you can tell it. He's just like, come on, let's move this thing. Come on, let's go. And so I think they're going to do the same thing when it comes down to picking a jury. Now, Baez said that he was not going to do that in the courtroom. He told the judge that he wasn't going to do that. But you know, there's no limit to the strikes. You know, the challenges. The only ones that are limited are peremptory, and the court. There's an X number of peremptory strikes, and those are the ones. And the judge, I don't know if he set that yet. That parameter, but those you only have a handful, and a peremptory strike is something like, I don't like that guy's face. I there's just something about his smirk. You don't have to have a reason why you don't want that person, and they're gone. But as far as like anyone else with a line of questioning, you can strike them. There's no limit. So the defense could, you know, conceivably, you know, drag this on. Remember, this is two prongs here. You got the prosecution, and they're just as picky with the jury they want. And what have you seen here with this case so far, between the motions and the hearings, and it seems to have gone at a snail's pace. So I don't think they're going to see the jury in 5 days, 6 days.
No, neither do I. Denny, do you think it's even reasonable?
I would love to see it, Simon, but I'm with you and Dave. I'm anticipating it's not going to be quite that easy, and it's not going to get started exactly as scheduled, although I do think Judge Perry will try to keep it as close as possible, but I just don't see it happening under the current timetable.
I'm going to ask Jan what her...
I knew you were going to do that to me.
Yeah.
Personally, I think they're going to have to do it because the defense does not want the jury to be selected in the Orlando area. And Judge Perry told them that would be the alternative.
Oh, they filed a motion about that, by the way, against that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's right. I forgot about that, yeah.
But Judge Perry is not going to put up with that. He's wanting to get this done and get it over with.
Oh, okay, the way I understand it is 5 days in a resort town. if the defense and prosecution can't agree, then it's back to Orlando, and we try again. If that doesn't work, then we go out to some other resort town. It sounds a bit like a thinly veiled threat to the defense. You're going to do it week one, or you're going to hate life. am I reading that correctly, Dave?
Yes, I think you are. Because the defense filed a motion about that. I wish I could find it here. But they said that there's no way that you can legally, you know, Judge Strickland, for example, already ordered that it could not be tried here. I mean, with a jury from here. So that's what the defense filed. They said you can't just up and just surreptitiously change because you have to overturn Judge Strickland's order. So, I mean, it's not just that. I think that you're right. I think the judge was sitting there saying, get your asses in gear, let's get this done.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the more I read about that particular ruling, you know, the more firmly convinced I become. You know, Judge Perry is saying, okay, you kids are going to play nice, otherwise I'm going to make your life hell.
Yeah,
well,
that's
right. Can you blame him?
So, on the subject of jury selection, this week we had a bunch of news stories that Judge Perry was spotted in West Palm Beach. Is this going to be where the jury is from, Dave?
I wouldn't bet the farm on it because he might have traveled elsewhere and no one picked up on it elsewhere.
They said that he has went other places.
Yeah. And I did some research. Now I do know that, like in Orange County, for example, the jail is run by its own staff of law enforcement personnel. It's not affiliated with the sheriff's office. But in Palm Beach County, where he went, that is the sheriff's office, and that would explain why he had sheriff's deputies around him. You know, because they might have been scoping out what the jail's like, how they're going to take good care of her. But like Jan said, they're going all around, and I'm not convinced that the jury's going to come from down there at all.
How far is West Palm Beach from Orlando?
That's a Cobra answer.
186 miles, give or take a few, and yes, I was at Gun Club most of the week. I've been in West Palm Beach most of the week, and I was, matter of fact, at Gun Club yesterday. That's AKA the jail in West Palm Beach, Gun Club. Everybody knows it because it's on Gun Club Road. And the sources, and I was wondering if he was going to go that direction, but sources very close to me believe that, yeah, you might be able to bet the farm on that one, Dave.
Really?
Yeah. Here's the thing. A couple different counties were looked at, and exactly what you said, Gun Club up there, the jail is run by the sheriff's office. Most of them down south this way are run by the sheriff. Broward County is. Metro Dade's kind of an oddity in itself because they're sheriffs, but they dress in brown and they're kind of like police, and i.e. the name Metro Dade. So coming out of Metro Dade, doubtful, and there's a whole lot of bad boys in Metro Dade, and a lot of bad shit happens in Metro Dade. One of the guys who shot and killed my partner, he ended up getting dead up in the jail down there. So Gun Club is probably, you know, and I like Broward County, don't get me wrong. I like love our sheriff. But Palm Beach County is probably one of the cleanest jails and the most efficiently run jails that you're going to go in and out of. Very efficient, very well run. This is all important, especially when you got this much press, this much attention on someone, the protection and safety of a prisoner. I would say of all the jails, and I've been in every single jail in the state of Florida. In fact, I was in one in Putnam County on the inside. But
Cobra, let me just ask you a quick question. I mean, you've been in this business. Is this like normal for the judge to show up somewhere like that and be photographed or acknowledged, you know, when you're trying to hide a jury?
I don't think, well, so first of all, in this day and age, you can't hide from anything at all. There's people watching everybody. Hell, Dave, there's people watching you going and coming on a daily basis. I mean,
oh,
people
I know
watch,
there are, yeah.
Watch people, and judge. The judge is no different. In fact, he's a higher piece on the pond table than anyone else, so you, of course they're going to watch him. Is it normal? I think it's due diligence. I mean, first of all, you're going to move someone that you have care, custody, and control over and change that chain of custody to someone else, you best be knowing who you're fixing to entrust with something that you're fixing to do because of the media fallout and everything else. It's going to be
a hard day. What's the TV market down there?
TV market's incredible. I mean, West Palm Beach is the Palm Beaches. I mean, every major story from California to wherever. I mean, if it's not in San Diego, Los Angeles, Beverly Hills, Hollywood, the next place on earth for major stories coming out of it would be Palm Beach County. They have some of the best press up there. But getting back to the custody control and maintaining this girl's safety and everything, there's probably not going to be a safer jail that people aren't going to be able just to run amok on. The sheriff up in Palm Beach County ain't nobody's dummy, ain't nobody to play with. The undersheriff happens to be a good friend of a good friend of mine. In fact, we were discussing with him about his fugitive we're after right now. So there's going to be no hucky buck and no playing around going on up there. Now, not to say that there wouldn't be in Broward County or wherever else, but Palm Beach County really has their act together when it comes to, you know, control safety and maintaining the prisoners and doing what they're supposed to be doing. You hardly ever hear of somebody escaping out of gun club. You know, you hear about them escaping out of Miami and shit like that, but never out of gun club. You don't really hear about stuff like that.
Okay, we're just about to lose our live listeners.
But fear not, folks.
It is all being recorded. I will have the link up shortly. All right.
I think
so,
they should go over to Putnam, Simon. I think they ought to go over to Putnam County and check that place out over there. Now, I love the sheriff over there. He's a great guy and everything, but I don't know if she'd get a fair trial in that city.
Well, you can get a $50 hotel in Putnam.
You can stay up cheap. You can get some of the best stuff cheap on Earth.
It seems to me that West Palm Beach basically fits the requirement. Judge Perry made a comment that it was about, you know, a 2 or 3 hour jaunt from Orlando. And Cobra, you said it's like 180 something miles.
Close.
Yeah, that would kind of fit the bill.
That deal's already been pretty much pinned. It's just a matter of, you know, if I was going to wake up on the morning of the 8th night, and I was a camera crew man, I would camp out on the 5th on Gun Club Road and wait for them to show up, because that's where they're going to be.
Dave, are you buying in?
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, I just think if the media is everywhere anyway, and as Jan said, that they know that Judge Perry went shopping elsewhere, how come he wasn't seen elsewhere? If the media is on top of all this.
Hey.
You know, that's the only thing.
Good question.
Dave ain't the bad cookie down the bottom of the box. He's on top of the pile.
It could still be something that, you know, they could have been planning it this way to throw everybody off.
Well, Jan, there's been way too much discussion. There was way too much activity and very, you know, I'm a betting man, and I mean, I'm not a betting man, but if I was a betting man, I would bet that I'd have my camera, and I'd be camped out on the sidewalk up there on about the 5th or 6th, so I'd make sure I got my front row seat and beat out the Palm Beach Post and beat out a couple of the Miami Heralds, and everybody else would be going that direction. But if you look at it geography-wise, if you look at it as we discussed about the security, and that's a big issue, Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office is the largest county, not land-wise, but the largest county, incorporated county in the state of Florida, second only by Duval County, which is largest landmass. But as far as deputy sheriffs and everything that they have in their control and custody, they're huge, and they're very efficient in what they do. In fact, you know, the main prosecutors and everything else, even the federal boys and everybody's there. So safety, security won't be an issue. They won't have to pipe in a bunch of added security, which you can best believe that security is going to be a forefront in most of this stuff anyway. So when you take security into it, and that's something I'm into, and you weigh out all the other, there is really no other probabilities except for coming right back to Orlando, because Orange County would probably be the second spot. Broward's a little small on the issue for that. Palm Beach County would be the place. And plus, historically, Palm Beach County would carry, by and large, the most press. You know, some of your larger cases came out of Palm Beach County. That's kind of like the Hollywood of Florida. Not to be confused with Hollywood, Florida, but that's kind of like the Hollywood of Hollywood, California, where the big stuff happens, like the OJ shit and everything else. This would be probably, I mean, you couldn't pick a better choice. Now, if it goes to something else, it's because maybe it just got a little bit too much attention, but I believe that for security purposes and everything else, everything that's involved in that, quarters for people to stay, the press, all the everything that's going to send upon, there isn't but about one county that could really handle all that, and that's West Palm Beach. Or Orlando,
okay.
But it was already a circus town.
Go ahead.
Okay. I need to wrap this program up. Peter Hyatt had to leave. He has a little league game that he needs to get his kids to. But I want to thank Peter for taking part, and I want to go quickly around the table and get everyone's parting thoughts. I think I'm going to start with the crime doctor.
Yes, I was pleased. Again, I remain pleased about the judge here and his rulings and decisions, and I'm hoping that they get off at least fairly close to the start date, and I still think it might not be quite on time, but I think Judge Perry will get it as close as possible, and I'm anxious to get going. I'm anxious to get started with this thing.
Week after week, I ask the same question. You know, are they going to find her guilty or innocent? And this week, I'm just going to ask, is she guilty or more guilty?
More guilty.
More guilty.
Yeah,
okay.
That's what I say too.
So you think the death penalty is definitely in the offing?
I would certainly like to think it is. I think that's good. I think the death penalty is going to be tougher than maybe to get than a conviction. But
yeah.
Right.
I think it should still be out there for sure.
Yeah. Cobra. Your words of wisdom for us?
Well, barring any sicknesses and diseases and things like that that would hold up jury selection come the day the jury selection is supposed to come on, I think that the next time we be speaking, I'll be talking to you from Palm Beach County, because my bet is that the trial will occur in Palm Beach County.
No, it's not the trial, the jury selection.
I mean, jury selection, well, hell, jury selection, whatever the hell they're fixing to do.
That will be next Sunday, by the way.
Well, pretty much that is the trial, because jury selection is the trial. So when you get to jury, you got the trial. So but it's going to be the trial.
That's it. That's when it starts.
That's right, brother.
Dave, what words of wisdom do you have for us?
Well, the only thing that I think I could answer or respond to about what was it? Mark Nijane had said something about the there was some, what was it, Cobra? You said about him that he had a problem with what being out on the blogs or on the internet or whatever.
Oh, I think that this he went on Nancy Grace. I think, just like I said about another infamous attorney, blinded by the light, I think he's blinded by the light, and I think he'd make a better undertaker than he would a commentator. And, and I think that the same way happened when you spoke to the judge, and now we no longer have that judge. I think what's going to end up happening, he's going to get a gag stuck on him, because you can't go talking about this kind of stuff no matter what, because he's too close to the case, and he's represented the Anthonys, and he's represented, like you said, EquiSearch guys. I mean, he's been around the table on this. So I don't think until this is all over and said and done with that he should be able to speak about anything. That's
well, you
my
still
opinion.
Have Brad Conway. He talks about stuff now.
Well, Brad
I mean,
Conway.
Suppose that Nijane is not representing TES any longer. I mean, would that
I wouldn't want anybody who represented me to be speaking about anything at all unless they had my express permission to do so. And Brad Conway, to my knowledge, is not trying to come out and get something out of this. Such as a show or a commentation spot or something like that. So I check the motive first, and then we go from there.
Okay. And Jen?
Well, we just, like I always say, let's don't forget, we want justice for Kaylee, because she's the reason that all this is happening, and we don't want her to be forgotten.
I'll tell you something, Jan. Without Jan, Simon, you know, we would all lose focus as to what the hell was really going on. And, Jan, I just commend you for continuing to keep that little girl's face before America. And we have to say that you're responsible for that, because the rest of us got caught up in all this other crap.
Thank you.
Okay. I really need to wrap this up. I want to thank everyone for listening in today. And I want to thank the panel for taking time out to verbally spar. And we will be back next Sunday. And if Cobra is right, he'll be calling in from West Palm Beach. All right.
Yeah. You'll have to have an emergency program.
Right. Tell next week. This is Simon Barrett and Jan Barrett wishing everyone a happy and safe Sunday and a happy and safe week. And we'll be back again next Sunday. Till then, goodbye.
Thank you all for being with
thank
us
you.
Today.
And thank you very much. Thank you very much
bye-bye.
For inviting me.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hasta la vista.